Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
What's going on, guys? NYG Weekly, Weiss here with you. Kind of a bonus episode here. I know we usually do this once a week, but kind of felt like given the Jones Shane press conference and a lot of the question marks going into the bye week, wanted to do an extra pod. Plus, I got a special guest coming on to discuss everything Giants with me later on. But I want to share my thoughts real quick about the Joe Shane press conference. It just got completed about 20 minutes ago. Started at 3 o'clock, recording right after that. Kind of have some fresh thoughts wanted to go over. But right off the bat, I mean, the expectation was this was not going to be a good press conference. This was going to be rough. I expected Joe Shane to be defensive, as he was. I expected him to kind of sell the future, as he did. And then I kind of expected him to not admit, but kind of come to that line of saying, yeah, we made some big mistakes in the first 2 years. So let's get right into it. Obviously, the big thing everyone wanted to ask him is, like, what's the plan at quarterback? Not just going forward this season, but for the offseason. And obviously, he couldn't answer what's going to happen in the offseason yet. But he basically admitted the same thing that Brian Daboll admitted. They're evaluating things. Now, when a head coach, or in this case, a general manager, comes out in the middle of a season when asked about who their starting quarterback is, and they say, well, we're evaluating things, 9 times out of 10, that means the starting quarterback is being benched. And I think for Daniel Jones, this is the end. A lot of theories have been thrown around about why they won't bench him or they haven't benched him yet. But at the end of the day, they're 3-13 in their last 16 starts with Daniel Jones at quarterback. They have that merit. They have that merit right there to bench him. And then on top of that, obviously the injury guarantee, the $23 million injury guarantee. And given somebody that's had those neck problems or those neck injuries, you can't mess around with that. And, the ACL is another big thing, but it's, as we've seen with Daniel Jones, when he takes off and runs, he doesn't exactly avoid contact. So seems like a benching is coming. Probably they'll go to Drew Lock. I've sort of said this on Twitter, I think, or X, they should kind of rip the Band-Aid off. Don't do this half measure approach. Well, he'll be the backup quarterback and, Drew Lock will be the starter. I think you deactivate Daniel Jones for the remainder of the year with the remaining 7 games. You go to Drew Lock and you have Tommy DeVito be the backup. You add a practice squad quarterback just in case either DeVito or Lock get hurt. And then you basically go forward with the mindset that Daniel Jones is no longer on the 53-man roster. And then once the offseason comes, you make it official. So I think that's coming based on what Joe Shane, but a couple of interesting stuff that Joe Shane tried to do or tried to sell to the to the fan base, but really to the media. They pressed him a lot about the quarterback, as we talked about, but they also talked about the first two draft classes. If you're somebody that thinks that Joe Shane should be fired, your opinion is based heavily on the fact of that 2021 class, that 2022 class. But what Joe Shane tried to do was he tried to sell the progress on 2024. Hey, look, we got Malik Nabers, who's a wide receiver one. We got Tyler Newbin, who's they think is a good safety. Drew Phillips is a great defensive player. And oh, we know we got the youngest defense in the league. And he kind of sold this narrative that, hey, we messed up in 2021. We messed up in 2022. But this draft class right here, this is pushing us forward. And again, that was expected. I think he was going to try to sell the future on this past draft class. On top of that, he didn't seem like he was giving up on any of his picks. Obviously, the Evan Neal situation played well against the Panthers. We'll see what happens the rest of the way. But, there was issues with Evan Neal. They did not like the way he handled his offseason in terms of rehabbing his injury. And he didn't come into camp in shape. He was still injured. He, was on PUP, missed the majority of camp. He had to regain their trust. And I guess, throughout the season, working with the new O-line coach, and he was able to regain some of their trust where they feel comfortable putting him out there last week against the Panthers. So we'll see if that continues. Obviously, everyone looking at that PFF score and saying, look how, he played really well. And yeah, he did. But, it was against the Panthers. So you have to see what happens going forward with Evan Neal. I do think that the O-line combination with Illuminor at left tackle and Neal at right tackle is what you're going to see. But in regards to the Evan Neal thing, that's what Joe Shane's excuse was with the swing tackle. Why, once again, when Thomas went down, they had to put Azudu out there and everything fell apart. He said, well, Evan Neal was supposed to be the swing tackle. You know, if AT got hurt, we were going to move Illuminor left and play Neal at tackle. Or if Illuminor got hurt, we were going to insert Neal. But the problem was he was not healthy. And not only that, they didn't trust him to put him out there. And whatever changed during the last month obviously led to Neal getting back in there. But that they didn't have enough trust in him that when AT first got hurt that they can say, okay, Illuminor, you're going to left. We're going to put Neal at right. Over on the offensive side, he kind of sold his offense as, hey, we're ready to compete. Talked about the skill players he has. He mentioned Jalin Hyatt, which goes back to how he's not ready to give up on any of his draft picks. He mentioned Hyatt. He still mentioned Slayton, so I think that there could be an opportunity where Slayton comes back. He was asked a lot about, you know, well, if you, you know, are you going to, you know, about the drafting of a quarterback? He said, yeah, you know, every situation is different. Talked about the Houston Texans where they sort of dropped CJ Stroud in there, and after years of bad football, they took off. So he sold his receiving core, sold the fact that his offensive line was good, which I sort of agree with. I think the offensive line was very good this year when Thomas was out there. Sold the running back, Tyrone Tracy, and he talked about how he feels like this offense can be a lot better with the quarterback, with a better quarterback, which, again, really surprising that he's admitting that, considering we're in the middle of the season. But again, he's selling the future. He's selling moving forward. And that's what I expected him to do. This doesn't come to a shock to me, but it came shock to a lot of people. But he was pretty adamant that he's coming back, and I believe him. I don't think the Giants are going to fire Joe Shane. I think even if it gets so bad where they don't win any of the rest of their games, I am, you know, you can't be 100% with this owner, but I'm, you know, 90% sure Joe Shane is going to remain the Giants general manager. I think a lot of that is because of how much turnover he brought to the front office and how it wasn't just a one-off season turnover. It was a over, you know, the course of two off seasons where they made those changes. They're all in on Joe Shane for the long haul. Whether the long haul is just 2025 or 2025 and 2026. I don't think Joe Shane is on the hot seat, despite what you see on Twitter and what, you know, certain reporters are putting out there. I think Joe Shane is going to be back, and I think him being adamant about that in a press conference when his team is 2-8, that should tell you all you need to know. As for Brian Daboll, I was a little bit surprised. There was a question that was asked to him about whether he thinks the issue is talent. He said no, and they said, well, what is it? And he kind of then kind of backtracked again and said, well, it's everything. I don't know about Brian Daboll. I think he's also safe. I think Joe Shane really wants to keep Brian Daboll around. After all, he really pushed to hire Brian Daboll over Brian Flores, if everyone remembers, when he was hired as the general manager. And Daboll is his guy. They do have history together. I do think he wants Brian Daboll back. I just think he's going to have to sell that on ownership. And I think that's going to be big over the course of the next 7 weeks. And why I think what's what I've been saying for the past couple of weeks, for Brian Daboll to avoid being put on the hot seat, avoid being fired, he has to show that his offense can be functional. Listen, a franchise quarterback's not walking through that door, you know, after the bye week. They have Daniel Jones, Drew Lock, Tommy DeVito. We know what it looks like with Daniel Jones. Not good, not functional, 32nd ranked scoring offense. I think he's the 24th or 25th overall. He can talk about all the close scoring games, but you don't really don't want to hear that when you're 2-8. Now, what Brian Daboll has to do is, if he goes to DeVito or if he goes to Drew Lock, is it has to be functional. I think it has to. It can't be the 32nd ranked scoring offense, because Joe Shane can't sit there and tell us, you know, how great the skill players are, how good the offensive line is, and, you know, all these young players that they have and how they're ready for, you know, essentially a young quarterback, but then come back and say, well, you know, we're the 32nd ranked scoring offense. It's just, you're contradicting yourself. So I think Daboll has to bench Jones, and I think he has to play a quarterback, whether it's Lock or DeVito, and it has to look functional. I'm not saying they have to be, they're not going to be a top 10 scoring offense. They're not going to be a top 10 overall offense. It's probably going to look sort of the same. I don't think it's going to look much better. But this whole, we're playing Daniel Jones to give us the best chance to win, it just doesn't work anymore. You have to show that you can feel the functional offense. You can't be the 32nd ranked offense or scoring offense in the NFL and, you know, expect to be back. I think Daboll has to show that he, as the play caller with his offense, with a lot of these guys that they brought in together, can be functional with either Drew Lock or Tommy DeVito. And if it's not, then obviously that doesn't bode well for Brian Daboll. Does that mean he's going to get fired? No, but certainly won't help. Yeah, I think that pretty much what I took away from it. I didn't like the fact that Joe Shane was constantly bringing up the close games. I think that's just a loser mentality. You're 2-8. You know, you have the worst record in the NFL. I don't care that you're 1-5 in close scoring games. When I go back to those close scoring games, when I go back to the Pittsburgh game, when I go back to the Carolina game, when I go back to the Dallas game, when I go back to that Commanders game, and I hope he's not counting that second Commanders game as a close game because of that late touchdown that they scored. But nonetheless, at no point in any of those games was I confident the Giants were able at no point did I think the Giants were able to win those games. And a lot of that's because of lack of confidence with their ability to score points and their quarterback. Now, going forward, you know, you can't necessarily keep saying, well, we're playing in these close scoring games. You're going to have to win some of these games to give us a little bit of confidence. But again, with the quarterback situation, it's tough to really expect anything going forward. So I was hoping he would not continue to say that. But the fact that he keeps harping on that as well, close scoring games, didn't like that. Not when you're 2-8. Maybe if their bye week was like week 6, right, and they're, 2-4, maybe you can say, oh, we played in a lot of close scoring games. There's a lot of football to be left. We got to figure out how to win some of these games. But when you're 2-8, worst record in football, year 3, you know, I don't want to hear that. I was kind of surprised nobody asked them about the salary cap space. Giants don't have a lot of cap space. They constantly have to do these roster shuffling, and you're 2-8. So it's, again, it just doesn't look good on that part. And then the one question, which I think it was Dan Duggan who asked it. Hey, do you regret how you handled the quarterback position? And he kind of softly said no, but it was pretty clear that he had to backtrack some of his previous comments about, you know, his decision to extend Jones the first time, where he was kind of like, well, we made multiple big decisions. Well, you're not going to regret extending Andrew Thomas or Dexter Lawrence. Do you regret extending Daniel Jones? And he kind of basically admitted it. I mean, let's be real. He basically admitted it, but he couldn't come out and say yes. And I'm not going to come away from this press conference saying that they threw Daniel Jones under the bus, but I will say that if they go back to Daniel Jones after the bye, then I don't know what the hell to think about anything with the Giants anymore. So that's my reaction to Joe Shane's presser. Obviously, if you like Joe Shane, I assume that you're okay with what he said. If you hate Joe Shane and you want him fired, you're probably, you know, fuming from the nose and you probably are out for blood. But I don't think this press conference was going to sway anybody's opinion, regardless on what side of the aisle they're on. At the end of the day, the Giants are 2-8. This is the third year of this regime. Same questions are there at the quarterback position than when they took over. Made a lot of mistakes. What they're selling you is, hey, that 2024 draft class looks good. Believe in us going forward. So John Mara believes in the front office. We'll see what happens with Brian Daboll, but that was a press conference. All right. Now I want to take us to our special guest. All right. We now welcome on our guest, one of my good friends, Will. Some of you guys know him on Twitter, at 20T7. Did I say that correctly, Will?
Yeah, it's just a misspelled version of the number 27, but yeah, you got it. How's it going, everybody?
Good. I don't even want to ask you about that Twitter handle because I'm going to get a long philosophical answer knowing you.
No, it's not. It's my family lucky number. It's my birthday and that's it.
All right. There you go. Well, Will, we've been trying to do this for a long time now. I think I've texted you every week for the last month. Hey, you want to do a pod this week? Hey, you want to do a pod this week? And finally, I figured it's the bye week. I have to do it. How are you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm, underwhelmed by the quality of football that we watch week in and week out. But, you know, besides that, it's been beautiful weather. The tailgates have been unreal. And I do think that the regime made a lot of the right decisions this offseason. So we're getting consequences from other bad decisions. But I still think that we're on the right track from what I would hope how I would hope the regime would pivot from a bunch of mistakes they made a year ago.
So let's get into it. I think you and I have talked about it, through text and stuff. I don't think we've talked on the phone. I think we've done it through text. Your thoughts on this? We'll separate the two. Let's talk about the general manager first. Just gave a press conference. I don't know if you saw it. What are your thoughts on Joe Shane? What are your thoughts on his press conference? He's trying to sell us on a brighter future based on the 2024 offseason, which is sort of similar to what you just alluded to. Admitted he made some mistakes in his first 2 years. The obvious being, you know what?
Paris
how
Campbell.
Do you feel? Yeah, Paris Campbell. how are you on Joe Shane right now?
Yeah, I've been. I think Joe Shane is a very good GM who looks at things the right way. And where I am when it comes to evaluating a general manager is the general manager going to put the team at risk in making himself look good? Which, from as Ethan mentioned on the last episode, as the man I would call his despicable predecessor was doing after his very first draft. And I don't see any of that. If anything, I see the opposite. I think going into this year, even going into kind of the middle of last year, the Giants realized, all right, we were too aggressive in 2023. I mean, if you look at how they structured the Jones contract, all along what they were doing is they were saying, we want to keep this nucleus that got us to the playoffs in 22 back for 2023. The only way to do that is we bite a little bit of the 2024 apple to put it into this unit. And that leaves 2024 a little bit deficient. And instead of digging into the future to try to make that right and to try to say, okay, we want this mistake to look less bad and we want to kind of save a little bit of grace on it, they've bit the bullet. And every single move they made this offseason has been in some way, shape, or form, how is this going to help 2025 or beyond? I mean, taking Greg Van Roten is like the one exception, you know, because he's a one-year little fill-in deal, but that's a minimum deal, and that not investing there is a way that they're going to be able to add to that position group down the line. And that's what you want a general manager to do when they make mistakes. I mean, there are a lot of ways they could have said, we don't want, you know, we paid Jones, we're committing money to the quarterback, let's try to get a couple other guys in one-year deals, do what we can to make the team more competitive right now. And, you know, we'll have fewer resources in the future going forward, you know, trade like Burns. Like a lot of people look at that as a win now move. I look at as much as a win now move as I want a Giant for life that were, you know, obviously he wasn't drafted as a Giant, but somebody who's going to be a capital Giant, not somebody who's going to be on the Giants for a couple years in his career. And hopefully if we get a quarterback coming in and we get another draft class and guys who are going to be here for 6-7 years, you're going to have those guys like Brian Burns and Dexter Lawrence who are leaders and who are setting the tone and saying, this is what being a Giant's about. We didn't have that for the last half decade. So, and then, I mean, talk about the rookie class and, you know, and Neighbors who looks fantastic. Newbin's held his own. Phillips looks like a third round steal. Obviously Theo Johnson and Tyrone Tracy as day three picks. And then Chapman also, you know, making plays as an undrafted guy. That's what you want in rebuilding a team. I mean, that's a dream come true. I mean, and we can talk about some of the other draft classes and where they look to be lacking. But overall, I mean, I think Shane, it goes without saying that he's a heaven and earth improvement over the last guy. And is that enough to be a general manager and to have a job security? Probably not. But that being said, I think he's setting things up that are going to bear fruit in the next couple of years. So I think pretty highly of them.
Yeah, I'm with you on this 2024 class. One thing I do know is that it took a while for them to sort of overhaul the front office. You know, it wasn't just like a one-off season thing. Like they really, you know, the scouting department, they changed things up. Yeah, a lot of the faces might have came in the first year. But when you kind of dig into it, how they look at players, how they draft players, how they scout players, how they go about negotiating contracts, how they go about making trades, like a lot of you sort of saw the philosophical differences from previous regimes to this regime this year. So I agree with you on that. And I think obviously, you know, the result is this draft class. You know, you don't want to crown a draft class 10 games into it. But, you know, you see like Tyrone Tracy is an electric bat. You know, Theo Johnson is coming into his role. I'm not saying Theo Johnson is going to be a star, but you sort of see like, okay, you see what he does well. You see the speed, you see the size, how he can be a mismatch. Obviously, we know what Malik Nabers is. Drew Phillips has just like hit the ground running, and you don't see that from a third round pick. So I'm with you on the 2024 class. The one thing I've always wanted to ask you is, obviously, the Daniel Jones contract, they regret it. They tried to replace him. They recorded themselves trying to replace him for HBO. The one thing that my biggest gripe is I was okay bypassing a quarterback. You know, if you didn't think that one was there at six and you tried to trade up and you couldn't, I was okay with it, right? I don't believe in taking a quarterback to extend your, you know, job security. I don't believe in that. I don't want my GM operating like that. So I was okay with that. But I also felt like my theory is, hey, Will, you're my quarterback, but like if I try to replace you in the draft, like that it's over with. Like people are talking about this Jones chapter needs to end, or this they need to close this era on the Jones era. Like they did that this past offseason when they tried to draft his replacement. So my biggest issue with them was, hey, you already closed the book. You already decided you're going to move on from him. You're trying to get his replacement. Why not try to bring in some competition? Why not try to bring in or have a competition between Drew Lock and Daniel Jones? Why this approach of like, hey, we spent all offseason trying to replace you. We definitely don't think you're the answer long term, but I want you to forget about that. You're still our guy. Here's Malik Nabers.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And the reality is, with the way that the Jones contract was structured, that there was no getting him off the roster this year. You understand that. And given that, you know, albatross basically on the books, I was more than happy with getting a skill position in the draft and saying, okay, by the time this new guy comes in, we're going to have a 5-year window instead of maybe a 3-year window. And he's going to have a little bit more to work with. You know, like I said, with some of those giants that we're hoping, you know, for rather than mercenaries, who are going to, you know, show him what it means to be a New York Giant. I agree with, you know, a lot of what's been said. I mean, what's been reported about Russell Wilson being told that he wouldn't have a chance to compete, that doesn't make any sense. And when it's hard to rationalize some of the things that we've seen and some of the things that we can kind of deduce from behind the scenes. I mean, the Jones era has been over. Obviously, you're talking about, you know, the Hard Knocks trying to replace them. But the Giants, it's the 100th season anniversary, if you haven't heard. So there have been a couple of things to celebrate that. They had that big night in the MSG Theater this offseason, where they had all sorts of legends who'd been Super Bowl winners for the most part. You know, a couple guys that, you know, were before my time. That was really cool to hear from. But they only had two guys from the active roster there, and those two guys were Bobby Okereke and Kayvon Thibodeaux, the quarterback who had just signed a $160 million deal the offseason beforehand, was not a part of this franchise defining event. And at the end of the day, that doesn't happen if everything's rosy there. It just doesn't happen. I mean, especially a guy who's so, you know, who talks to fans exactly the way that Mara wants him to be talking to fans. He's a lame duck, you know, and that's what it is. And it's hard to win with a lame duck, both because, you know, obviously who's not that good and who can't do things that you expect from an NFL quarterback. But there's also, I mean, these guys in the locker room aren't idiots. They see what we see. They, you know, I had a chance to go to Devin Singletary's fundraiser last week, and I
your favorite meet. Number 26.
Yeah, I mean, you know me. If there's a chance to support 26 on the team, I'm going to do it. but yeah, I mean, I got to talk to him. I got to talk to Turbo, and you know, they weren't coming out and saying like, you know, oh, DJ can't play or anything like that. But the you know, it was at a comedy show. Comedian said some things, and you know, it's people are going to laugh. There's a elephant in the room that people understand, and it's got to be really difficult to be a pro career when you know that the GM just can't wait until he has a much better quarterback coming in. But what you're saying, you know, I don't understand. Why are they saying, okay, it's Jones? You know, why is Dable saying he's not even thinking about Jones? You know, whether to pull Jones, when really for a couple weeks now, every possession when the Giants take the field, I do a double check, you know, straight craning my neck to make sure it's Jones who's coming in the quarterback. You know, I don't take that for granted, possession over possession anymore.
Yeah, I think the handling of the quarter, like if there's, you know, obviously there's two sides to it. There's people that want a clean house, the people that they have their reasoning. I don't think there's a wrong answer here. I truly don't. But the one thing that I'm 100% with that crowd, is, you know, you basically threw away a year. You talked about the elephant in the room. Well, they kind of made it worse. Like, if they would have said, okay, we tried to replace Jones, but, you know, we went and signed, you know, whatever, you know, cheap quarterback, you know, journeyman quarterback, or even with Drew Lock, like they brought in Drew Lock, and they for a backup, they paid him a decent amount of money.
So Drew Lock got more this year. Yeah. Drew Lock got more this year than Baker got to start last year. And,
exactly.
You know, and Giant fans on Twitter were clowning Baker because he got less money than Daniel Jones. And they said, ha ha, your career is a failure. I mean, the cartwheels that this, you know, our fan base does on Twitter to try to make a point is breathtaking.
Yeah. There's a lot of mental gymnastics going on. But like you said, like they created this elephant in the room because of the Hard Knocks thing, because of the fact they taped this, because of the sound bites of Dable saying, yes, I would trade up for this quarterback, because of the multiple scenes where, you know, Joe Shane is talking to New England. You know, I don't know if this came from the Hard Knocks of the Giants. I think it came from the Hard Knocks of the Bears, where he tells Ryan Poles, hey, you know, you're lucky. You don't got to worry about the quarterback position for the next 10 years because he had the number one pick. Like, all these sound bites that came out all signaled sort of what Rich Eisen said, if you remember, in the offseason. We're like,
of course, buyer's remorse.
Yeah. Buyer's remorse. So it's like you had that, but then you still did. You didn't allow Drew Lock to compete for the starting quarterback job. And maybe Drew Lock doesn't win a quarterback competition with Jones. I was there during the summer. They both looked equally bad. So that's that to me, that's my only thing, right? That's my biggest pet peeve with them. And I hope they learn their lesson. I think he sort of admitted that today too. He kind of gave that soft no, like, no, but it's like, yeah, come on. You have to think about that one.
I think you'll appreciate this one, but the no reminded me a lot of Kamala Harris, you know, asking if she'd do anything different, you know, than what Biden was doing for 4 years. You know, no, I can't think of anything that comes to mind. Like, I mean, you know, he's not going to come out and say like, yeah, you know, that money I gave Daniel Jones, bad idea. Wish we had someone else. By the way, DJ, like, you know, go out and fight for us. But at the same time, it's like that, you know, nudge, nudge, yeah. Wink, wink, wink. If you're on the audio, it's, you know, and there's only, you know, I don't understand what fans are necessarily expecting from him to say. They all but told us with every kind of thing that they've done was that they realized 2023 was a mistake. I mean, I'm not even sure how much it wouldn't stun me if the Giants kind of eased Waller into that retirement and kind of, you know, encouraged that as part of the transition. I don't necessarily know if that was all in Waller's camp. And if he had a place coming back, because if you look at how all the rest of the offseason does, it doesn't make sense that they wouldn't take the opportunity to save that money given the way that the rest of the team is going. So that, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with this. And I'm not going to say week over week, you know, evaluating the coach and the general manager over that. We know what we have.
Yeah, you know, I hate that we do that.
It's like, you know, Tyrone Tracy drops the ball in the first.
Yeah, fire Brian Daboll.
Yeah, you know, there's no coming back from that. Like, it's, you know, Gano misses a field goal that he absolutely should make. I mean, Gano, he's in the twilight of his career, as we all know right now.
Right.
He's getting way too much money because, you know, of a restructure that made no sense when there was nothing else to do from the last regime. It's not like the Giants could have really afforded to fix it, to replace him this year. There's still a lot of dead weight that's plaguing this organization from old bad decisions, and obviously 2023 compounded to that. But if you want to fire them for the 2023 mistakes, you do it already. You don't let it, you know, look worse and make the optics look worse and say, okay, you know what, the optics now, we can't survive this.
Yeah, I think you're 100%. I love that. If you're firing them for what they did in 2023, then you should already fire them. Like that's, I really like that point. But so I sort of agree with you there. I think you can't pull the plug. You can't after 3 years. I was having this conversation with somebody, and I would love to get your thing before we get to Brian Daboll. But I think a lot of the NFL product this year has not been good. You know, there have been close games, but the games are not entertaining. It's a lot of, you know, bad football, especially last night. It was a close game, but it wasn't entertaining. It wasn't a good product.
And it's really, you know, I just want to complain about something because this is like the first audience I've had probably of the season. But, you know, you have a real problem when there's something at home, when there's something on TV, and you have people all over the country on their couch who identify mistakes the officials make immediately, and you can't do anything about it. I mean, you know, I'm a big tennis fan, and tennis going into next year will be exclusively electronic line calls. And that started to happen on some surfaces. And the difference in the quality of play is so pronounced. You don't have people losing their minds over an official making an arbitrary mistake that completely changed the course of the tournament. It's a no-brainer. So the idea that you don't have a sky judge in every officiating crew saying, okay, we missed this face mask. Hey, let's confirm this. And, you know, have it be some sort of collaborative process. You know, hey, by the way, you know, that face mask penalty you just called, he didn't actually grab the face mask. He grabbed the jersey and it looked like the face mask, because you can't just assume these calls, and we have the technology to fix it. We can't lean on that. And baseball is even worse, but that's, you know, that's a whole other discussion. But yeah, the product stinks.
The product stinks, and the officiating is a big problem with it too. But I also think, and I was having this conversation with somebody, and before I say this, I'm not defending anybody on the Giants, and you'll see why. I think there's so much turnover with rosters. Like, we're constantly firing head coaches, we're constantly firing coordinators, you know, quarterbacks, we don't give them a longer lease. Like, I remember when Tom Brady talked about a few months ago about quarterbacks and how we just, like, we get rid of them so quickly, there's no proper development. I sort of agree with that. Like, I think, like, if you're a quarterback and you're at a high, you know, a prestigious school, prestigious football school like Alabama, Texas, whatever, I think you would be more wise to stay in school more rather than go to the NFL, where it's like you're immediately asked to start. And then, oh, by the way, if the first year goes bad, they might bench you. Like Bryce Young, look at how much the Panthers invested in Bryce Young. They benched him 2 games into his second year. You know, Anthony Richardson was touted as somebody that, you know, has all the tools but needs the development. And look at they benched him for Joe Flacco. Like, I just think, and again, I'm not saying right decision, wrong decision. I'm not saying these are franchise quarterbacks. I'm just saying, like, we're so quick to pull the trigger. And a lot of that is tied to all these unhinged owners now who are like, immediate results. If we don't get it, you know, we're going to make changes in the second year. And then, you know, you're turning over rosters again. You got all these young players that are going to be released because they don't fit the new system. So how much of that do you think plays into it? Or is it just something that, is it just tied to officiating and the rules?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, obviously the golden age of quarterback that, you know, to my early adult life, at least, has come and gone. You know, Aaron Rodgers is at the end. You know, the class of 2004 and Eli and Peyton and Tom Brady, you know, a lot of these guys, Matt Ryan even, you know, have left the league. And who's left? I mean, you know, even the class of 2012 is pretty much done at this point, you know, with Andrew Luck out of the league and Russell Wilson, you know, at the end. And that's, you know, 8 years after Eli. So if you look at like the quarterbacks who've been drafted over the last 6 years, really only 2 first rounders have been really showing up. And not 6 years, because 2020 had a bunch of guys, but like if you look at since 2021, you had 5 quarterbacks drafted in 2021. Only Trevor Lawrence is starting with the team that drafted him, and that team's right now is the number 1 overall pick in the draft. You look at the 2022 class, CJ Stroud looks great. Bryce Young's a disaster. Anthony Richardson is, am I confusing 22 with 23?
That was 2021, 2023 was the Bryce Young draft. Yes. Because Joe Shane was looking at quarterbacks during the 2022 season.
Yeah.
So that's 2023, 2022 was the year, I think, of Kenny Pickett. And
that's right. Yeah. That was the year that nobody was good. But even like, you know, Malik Willis goes to Green Bay and he looked, you know, he's somewhat competent, but yeah, that whole idea is something that I've argued for a long time. It doesn't make sense to me that, you know, you have guys who get drafted at 21 or 22, and then at 2023, and by the time they're 23 years old, I'm confusing the years and the ages. By the time they're 23 years old, you're saying, okay, this guy can't play. If I want a quarterback and I'm trying to pick like in a perfect world, how old is my quarterback? Maybe I'm picking 28 or something like that. And how he looked at 2022 at age 22. Has so little to do with how I expect him to do down the road. I mean, you remember Eli at the beginning of his career.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't have the flashes that Jones had. I mean, he lost his first 8 starts. I tell the story all the time. 2007, the year we won the Super Bowl, I had a guy who spilled beer over me. I was 18 years old in the bathroom. He had 3 interceptions against 3 pick sixes against Minnesota. And I said, yeah, I still want to see what we've got in this kid. And the guy's like, forget it, man. And he dumps his beer on my head. And I'm like, okay. I go back and I try to explain to my dad, no, I'm not doing anything wrong. You just vouch for Eli Manning.
Eli always struggled against Minnesota. historically, like if you look at his numbers, he always had bad games against Minnesota.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Jones and Carey didn't in the playoffs, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that should have been the biggest sign that he's not the guy, right?
He didn't struggle against Minnesota. Yeah, but and to your point, I think you see that with quarterbacks, and to another extent, you see that with offensive lines. You don't see the offensive lines develop the cohesion they had 20 years ago when it's the same group year over year. You have people fitting in, people getting hurt all the time, and just the difference between great OLs and then competent OLs is huge. And then the difference between competent OLs and, you know, don't deserve to be on the field OLs, we get reminded of that every year as Giants fans. And it's those are the two units where I think, and part of it might have to do with the CBA. I mean, there's a lot of talk about offensive line not getting, you know, the physical practice that they need, but it's the quality of football it definitely feels down.
Yeah. I think I saw this somewhere where I think, you know, more than half the league has turned over their coaching staff in the last 2 years. I think it was like 17 jobs that have been,
and then
that's crazy. You know,
and then January rolls around and you look at the teams on the quarterback and you see guys who've been in there for 8 years. It's not a coincidence. And that doesn't necessarily mean though, like whatever it is, you just hold the course. Like,
right.
You know, like I talk about this a lot. Patience means, all right, I turned on the oven, let it preheat before I put food in the oven. Patience does not mean I just got home. We're not going to start, you know, we're not going to start dinner. Like, you know, let's wait. You still need that oven to be heating up while you're being patient. Which is why, you know, the last regime calling for patience as they were, you know, trying to go forward instead of backwards was ludicrous. But the more and more, you know, as we pivot this conversation to Brian Daboll, the more and more turnover you have at the head coach, the more times things get rough and you say, all right, we're going to change the coach, the weaker that head coaching position becomes. You know, McAdoo was hired, you know, half hired really, because they didn't want to lose him to Philly. He never really got to wear the big boy pants. He never was a coach in the locker room like Coughlin was. And a couple, you know, corner, you know, guys on secretary in the secondary, good players decide they're getting fed up with Eli Apple and the offense being inept, and they immediately pull the plug on him. That makes Shermer weaker. That makes Judge weaker. And eventually, you've just got to say, this is our guy. This is what he says. You know, we're gonna have to let him call the shots. We're gonna take the punches as they go with that. And so, you know, if Shane doesn't have a problem with Daboll, that's good enough for me. If Shane does see like, okay, you know, we had a good thing going with Wink, you kind of pushed him away. Hey, this weight loss thing, it's obviously not working out. The last time the head coach had a glow up McAdoo in 2017, that didn't look good. You know, if Shane decides there's something wrong with that, that's fine. But I don't want to punish Daboll for getting lucky in 2022, because that's what a lot of the reactive, and I think, you know, this comes both ways. In 2022, Daboll made a lot of kind of iffy decisions that ended up working out. I go back to that week one decision to go for two. That was universally like praised for going for the win. By giving Tennessee that much time left, they let them go for the win and get us back. And had we just gone for one, they would have taken overtime. So yeah, we got that missed field goal but that was, I mean, they had a very, very, it was like, you know, Kansas City versus Denver this last week.
Yeah.
They did everything to lose that, and the kicks missed. And Dable's a genius, just like Gano misses the kick in Munich, and now he's got to go. It's, you know, not necessarily looking at what the coach is doing that's leading to these things. And where, sorry to keep ranting, but where
no, go.
I'm trying to remember even who we played. It was, where was the 2-point conversion we went, the Pittsburgh Monday night a couple weeks ago. It's really hard to reconcile how it seems like the Giants will develop a great game plan and we'll call plays that minimize the shortcomings our roster has on the field, but the players just don't seem prepared. Like, we can't get a playoff in the 42nd play clock. Devin Singletary is not ready for this formation, but they've clearly practiced a lot to block the one guy that, you know, otherwise would have led to an easy score. So it's like, it's a bit of a catch-22, because there's some things that I really like the coaching staff's doing. I love the analytics. I love the way that they, you know, when I say the analytics, like the way that they're going for two, even though it's not working at positions where getting the two means a lot more than missing the two. I love that decision to keep 12 men on the field and give that force that delay.
The Pittsburgh game.
That was a brilliant, you know, forward thinking move. But there's just a lot of
you know, the idea that we're getting these delay of games, that we're not, you know, that we just are getting our tail caught between our legs is unacceptable.
Yeah, the 2-point conversion play, like I said, it was the right process to go for it, but then that doesn't mean I'm giving credit to Dable, but then you look at the execution, it's like, how can so many people be confused if you practice this all the time?
Yeah, I mentioned to you, it was like the play clock, they barely got it off with, you know, yeah, with the play clock. You got to be prepared with that. I mean,
yeah, you're right. So, you know, Brian Daboll, right? Brought in, everyone talks about the offense. I think his offense has been ranked in the 20s. The first 2 years now, I think we sit at, you know, 27, but the scoring offense is what's the alarming part, 32nd ranked. I listened to Joe Shane's presser over again.
What were your takeaways on that?
Well, I think he had to be defensive. He had to sell a brighter future. It was like a campaign event. You know,
that's the first word I would have used. Yeah, defensive.
He had to defend himself. He had to look, you know, look forward, not backward. I like that he gave kind of an honest answer about 2022 while not also throwing Jones under the bus, because I think if you throw the quarterback under the bus, it makes you look bad. And while fans are out for blood, I think you kind of have to do that. The one thing that interests me was I didn't see like a vote of confidence for Brian Daboll. Now, that doesn't mean that Brian Daboll is going anywhere. It's almost as if I think, and I'm not reporting this, I'm just saying, I think Joe Shane over the next 7 weeks is going to try to sell ownership on the fact that Daboll is the right coach for this job. And him and I are aligned. We agree. You know, every major decision we made was together. I don't think this is a situation where, you know, as we see with previous regimes, right, where it's like the GM is trying to save his job by throwing the coach under the bus. I don't think that's the case. I think he's genuinely, Daboll is his guy. I know that he pushed hard for him when ownership wanted Brian Flores. And I don't think anything has changed over the course of the last 3 years. I think they're aligned. I think he's trying to keep them. But again, it's tough to sell ownership when you go, you know, 3-14 or 4-13, whatever, and you're losing 6-7 games in a row. It's tough to sell that. But I do think there's part of ownership that's like, okay, we'll let Joe Shane make that decision.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we go back a couple weeks to the event when Mara was asked about Shane and Daboll, I frankly took Mara saying, like, yeah, I have no plans to fire either of them. It's kind of a bearish sign more than a bullish sign on their future, just because obviously we've seen how the last votes of confidence he's given have turned out. But
I think there's context that's needed with those vote of confidences.
Right. But, what Mara is saying is not necessarily like, this is the direction I'm committed to. It's, God, I really hope my hand's not forced and we have to, you know, make that call at the end of the year. And the other thing that I'm just saying is that the idea that he kind of goes out and gets out in front and says, you know, I really hope we don't have to take that direction. That is kind of, but he felt like it was necessary to like, to say that much. That makes me think that the idea is kind of in his head, which I didn't necessarily think it necessarily was going into that. So, you know what I mean by that? Because I'm thinking like, if the Chiefs were to ask, like, if Andy Reid was safe, they just, you know, they would laugh or something like that. Maybe that's an extreme example, but even if, you know, say the Bears were asked about Eberflus, who's a pretty early on, but they're obviously underperforming a little bit. You know, I think they would answer the question in a less pronounced way that, you know, that didn't feel like they have to be defending something that obviously needs to be defended at the moment. And that's just the only part of it that concerns me a little.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I also think that, like, I know John Mara doesn't want to fire anybody. Like, I think he doesn't want to fire anybody. I genuinely believe like, my whole thing is right now for Brian Daboll to save his job, he has to look functional on offense. Because as they get ready to bench Daniel Jones here, it's probably not going to make a big of a difference in their win-loss column. But they have to look functional offensively. So many, like, we're past the point with Daboll where it's like, you know, the quarterback is holding this offense down. Because it's 3 years. This is the third year. You have to show something where we can look back on and say, like, yeah, we you know, we watched the all 22 and we see, you know, receivers open. We see, you know, the good play calls. Like, I haven't had an issue with Daboll's play calling in general. Some of the time management stuff could be better, but overall, it's not, there's nothing glaring. His coaching hasn't cost us games. You know, I know the Washington game with the kicker thing, but I mean, he has to show that his function, his offense can be functional. It can be bad, but you can't be 32nd in scoring, you know, and maybe it's just optics, right? But you have to show that okay, essentially a lot of the issues are the quarterback. That's essentially what Daboll has to show here. And it's like, look, I improved a little bit with Drew Lock. Maybe we didn't win enough games, but, you know, just sell that on ownership. I don't think it's a hard sell for Daboll, in my opinion. And then obviously don't talk yourself out of a job either. Do the stuff that Joe Judge did. That you can't do, which I think Daboll is pretty good with that.
And I think he has no reason to. I think, you know, and I've always defended Judge just because the day that Judge was, well, even well before Judge was hired.
We ran laps for him in the parking lot at MetLife Stadium.
I didn't make it. I still run laps for him, but I wrote him in for a congressional office on my New York ballot. But
there you go.
But I also voted for Joe. I got it backwards because I voted for Joe Shane for the city justice because it was like somebody running on a pose. Because like John Mara, I wanted to deliver him a vote of confidence.
There you go.
But with Judge, you know. Judge was handcuffed by the general manager. Judge was right. Not allowed to do the things that Judge wanted to do. And what Judge was doing was a cry for help and saying, like, look, like, I'm blinking twice. This is not okay. This is a duress call. Shane has been, or, sorry, Daboll is, I feel like, has been empowered at every turn by his general manager. He has no reason to kind of get any message out to the fans or to ownership or anything like that. And where I think the Giants fans really missed the beat is, Judge was saying that everything that we've been complaining about was wrong. He was saying this is not a way that a professional team can run. And you know, like what people always forget with those QB sneaks at the end, the week before in Chicago, we were stuck on the goal line and we got stopped for a safety. So it's like, you know, yeah. there was a level of incompetence that preceded that. It wasn't Joe Judge saying, like, you know, this is how we do winning football. We got to turn, you know, 3rd and 7 into 4th and 5.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on both those points. I think they have empowered Brian Daboll. I think he's sort of been the face of the franchise, really, if you think about it, the last couple of years.
Well, it's really turned this year into Dex.
I think in terms of more like good or bad, he's at the forefront of it. Like, Dex is a great player and he's been a leader, but I think the separation between him and Daboll in terms of face of the franchise is, and a lot of that's because he's also the head coach, but like, Daboll is the face of everything with what's been wrong with the Giants, I think, where people have looked at him. You know, they mentioned Shane and the contract to Jones, but they're like, well, Brian Daboll, this is the quarterback whisperer. This is, you know, the guy that molded Josh Allen, but look what's happening here. He's sort of been the guy that's taking a lot of the heat, which I guess is.
Yeah, in taking heat, sure. But I think in terms of the face of what, you know, what's wrong, I would say that is Daniel Jones. I mean, people, you know, I think if anything, I'd point to, like, you know, the Daniel Jones as he's falling over in Philly in, you know, in 2020 as, like, you know, oh, classic Giants. Look, you know, look at what's happening now. But the way that the organization has really embraced Dex as like their cornerstone player has changed in the last year. The way that and one thing that the Giants have started doing this past year at games, which I absolutely love, is they brought player intros back, which is, you know, for the first time in over 20 years. And with Dex coming on out of the tunnel, it's like LeBron. He comes out last. They change the music. They get louder. And it's like, 97. And, you know, and he comes out and he does, you know, and he does something different. Like, the Giants haven't had someone like that. I mean, they tried to, you know, force feed that with Saquon. Odell could have been that, but the Giants really didn't want to give him that platform. But Dex is really like the guy that the Giants want to be like. It's, you know, it's Dexter Lawrence's team.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with some other big personalities now in the locker room like Burns, you know, that's kind of empowered him to kind of take that step. But I would say for things that are good, Dex is the face. For things that are bad, DJ's the face right now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think I look at it more in terms of like, if the offense succeeds, they don't give they don't and they look at the head coach and say, hey, he's doing, look at what he's doing with what he's dealt with. If it's bad, they look at him and say, hey, you're supposed to be X, Y, and Z, but you know, we're not getting that. But so I wanted to ask you about 2022, because you've had some interesting thoughts about that year. Did you enjoy that year?
It's a great question. Yeah. Because the answer is really no. Like, I did not enjoy the wins that year. And you know this, but I was working a lot of Sundays that year. So that was the one year that I wasn't really able to experience a lot of the home games. And had I been upfront and personal, it probably would have been hard for me to be as cynical as I was, you know, from my computer screen in the office on Sundays. But all of 2022, I was saying, like, you know, we have a losing roster that this regime has been handed, and they just need the excuse to be able to move on off of that. And the more wins, obviously, not only did it decrease the draft capital, which, okay, you know, as much as that, you know, plays into facts, so what? The big issue was it told the Giants that they could compete and go forward rather than taking the step backwards. I think like the playoff game was fun. I didn't think we had a chance of beating Philly in the playoffs that year.
The playoff game was so much fun.
And
I went to Minnesota. Will, it was awesome. I know. Looking back on it, you kind of wish it didn't go that way. And I'm with you on the cynical stuff, but that feeling of winning that playoff game in that stadium.
I was on my ski trip, and I booked, not thinking that there'd be any reason to, you know, for me to be anywhere else that year. And I was rocking my LT jersey on the mountain, you know, the day.
I had COVID in that stadium that game. I did. I had COVID because I remember when I got home, I went to go get tested, and I tested positive. So I was sick.
You could have gone out with Isaiah Hodgins the night before, and right now we would have had Mitch Trubisky last year. The Giants would have had $70 million in cap space for a quarter, but no, I think that's the 2022. You know, obviously going into that year, declining the Jones contract. People forget, though, going into 2022, a lot of fans second guessed the decision to pick up Dexter Lawrence's option, thinking that, you know, he had been an underperforming four year rookie.
That was me.
Well, some use the word fraud, but Shane made a great call there. I just don't understand how you can go from, yeah, I'm not going to pay this guy $23 million. Now I'm going to run a Mickey Mouse offense from this guy because we don't really trust him to make big boy throws. And now we're going to give him a blank check, you know, and say that he's going to be back next year and end up basically doubling.
Do you think ownership would have allowed them to part ways? I don't think they would have.
I don't think it's that binary. I don't think it's saying like, this is the way it has to be, but I think they're saying like, look, if we don't have anything better, we know what we have with this guy. And Art asked a question in the press conference today that sounded, excuse me, identical to the question that I asked Shane in the town
hall. And he got a very authentic response from Joe Shane too.
He did.
Authentic response.
He thinks about that a lot. I asked that question at town hall. I said, you know, how do you balance, obviously, you know, overperforming expectations in 22 with letting, you know, ways to improve the team now interfere with your long-term plans? And what he specifically said with DJ was, you know, he loves the way DJ comes into work. And basically they trust that, you know, DJ does enough things right that the Giants can continue to put things in around him and he will not be a problem. Obviously he's underperformed even that generously low expectation that we could have said he had. But I think, you know, in hindsight, you know, which I think is just so disappointing because for me, it was unambiguous, you know, and I remember the Giants were 6-2 and a lot of fans were talking, or fans and experts were saying, this Giants team is the worst 6-2 team ever. And then they beat Houston the week after. And you have a bunch of, like, you know, what I call like the quantity, not quality, content creators responding to those experts saying, you mean the worst 7-2 team ever. And I didn't think being the worst 7-2 team ever was nearly as fun as all these people are. And it seems like they're kind of more on the same page. But what that means is I don't look at this as year three of this regime. I've never looked at this as year three of this regime.
You've told me that before in the past.
You know, year one, they couldn't do anything. And then year two, they didn't look at it as year one for the rebuild. They tried to extend that year, you know, that year zero. I loved the Leonard Williams trade last year. I obviously would have loved to see more proactive moves to make sure you can get some sort of assets, asset for those expiring contracts. And not only that, to just get the money off the books. Like, there's all this talk about, you know, Aziz is here and the Giants may be saying they needed a fourth. Like, you know, if you can save $2 million for next year.
Well, I think that they didn't trade off those assets because I think Joe Shane is trying to do his part in saving Brian Daboll's job.
Yeah, and I think
that's what this whole thing is about. Like, Brian Daboll has to field a competitive team. And with the Kayvon injury, he was like, I can't, you know, what, they're going to put Tomon Fox out there? Like, he just couldn't do it. And I think he's trying to keep Daboll's job.
There was I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was NYG and CLT or something like that. Ricks, I think his name, who said this before the press conference. And he made he wanted somebody to ask Shane what the identity of this team is. And I would say that the identity of the team is the defensive line. I think that is certainly, I mean, we're leading the team in sacks at 2 and 8. You don't really see that in the NFL. But, and I imagine what he thinks in the back of his head to an extent is, all right, the offense has been a disaster. It's really ugly. But what we're falling back on, like, that one thing that we know we do right, is that that is lean on that defensive line. And if you were to trade Aziz, maybe, you know, if you're not sure if you can how healthy Kayvon is for the rest of the year, maybe that foundation starts to crack, and maybe that leads to kind of domino effects and guys, you know, cornerbacks, you know, half passing it and stuff like that. And I can see that. I would have, to me, I think trading Slayton was a no-brainer. I understand that he offers a lot more than the other wide receivers on the roster currently, but I just don't think that, you know, maybe he'll offer another team that they're willing to give something up. And that's, you know, that's like $4 or $5 million that the Giants would recoup by trading him. I think just given where they are, that's a move that should have been done if it were possible.
Yeah. I want to throw some fastballs at you real quick. You're one of your big things about drafting quarterbacks is you much rather have a established roster that has a lot of their holes filled before you dump a quarterback into it. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you real quick. Do you think that this roster is ready for a young quarterback? And they're not going to name any names, but you know the guys that are in the 2025 class. Do you think we're ready to dump a quarterback in there if they deem that one of these guys is a franchise quarterback?
Yeah, I'll say yes. And both from a talent perspective and from a finances perspective. Like, okay, this, the regime's done a really good job the last two off seasons, even two off seasons ago outside of the Daniel Jones deal, of making sure they're not having contracts like the Graham Gano contract that's just going to lead to a 3 years down the road a big hit that we can't get out of. So I think the roster is nimble enough. I think the offensive line will come back. They'll have guys who've had a little bit of continuity. I think GVR is going to be the one offensive lineman that'll really have to be upgraded going into next year. But I would say that at this point, I think we're ready to add that quarterback. Now, I would also say that adding a quarterback doesn't necessarily mean that you should expect that quarterback to come in and immediately have success. And,
of course,
you know, if you look at a lot of the veterans, you know, top veterans in the league who've gone to new situations, only Brady really did, you know, was a success. We talked, you guys talked recently. I mean, Rodgers has been a mess. Russell Wilson.
Well, Matthew Stafford went to the Rams, won a Super Bowl.
That's another great example. Yeah. Sorry, I missed that.
And I think, I mean, Jared Goff is, would you say he's having success too in Detroit?
Yeah, but that was more of like that was not really.
Yeah, they sort of dumped him. Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah.
But like Matt Ryan, like all those guys that the Colts tried to plug in over there, like Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, none of those guys ended up working out for the Colts. But the only point I'm trying to say is I don't necessarily say that year one is that year where that quarterback's going to have to necessarily show success. I mean, and I think I want the regime to be more focused on doing things right than doing things quickly. And I think the frustration that really boils over from several other years that a lot of fans hope they shortcutted their way out of with the success that we saw from 2022, thinking that when Daboll decides to pass, it's going to work because it came from Daboll. I think people just want that to be over, but I don't necessarily think that's the best way to get to the longest, you know, the longest term success.
Do you think this roster is I've seen all the narrative around it, but do you think this roster is a lot closer to contention than what the narrative says it is? Like, do you, like, I would separate the quarterback from it, just looking at it from a talent perspective. Do they have the playmakers? Do they have the game wreckers? Do they have the good young players on the cheap contract that they can take advantage of? Have the money that they've spent? Are you seeing sort of the return on investment? Do you look at this roster and it's like, okay, you know, I hate to say quarterback away because everybody uses that, but I think any team can be a quarterback away, right? But do you really feel like if this team gets adequate quarterback play, that, yeah, it can compete for the playoffs? And I think that's, do you think that's possible or where they are right now?
The cheap answer I'm going to say is I would hope so, but like a part of me is starting to wonder if it's like, there's something about the Giants jerseys that just take away, like, you know, it's like Space Jam with the talent. Like you see, you change the entire coaching staff, you change the entire roster, and we still like have problems doing things that every other team in the NFL does fine. It's like, I remember Clemon Barstool put up like, hey, did anybody consider that maybe the Giants left tackle position is just like cursed, like the defense against the dark arts position at Hogwarts? Like,
but you don't think that the quarterback, like, look, I don't want to dump on Jones, but like, to answer I feel your question, like he genuinely kills any confidence they have. Like, I truly believe that.
Yeah, I mean, with Jones, there are just a few observations on Jones, because I think I was actually higher on Jones than a lot of fans for a lot of his career. And I remember he had me on right after the Saints game in 2021, and I was like, he's the guy, which I've second-guessed every game since then, I'd say, for the most part. But what's amazing with Jones is you've got somebody who's the most athletically talented, probably the athletically gifted quarterback we've ever had.
Since Y.A. Tittle.
He can't run if it's not like, okay, Daniel, you're going to run on this play. You know, he can't just tuck the ball and take off. Like, it has to be a design run. And that is so baffling for me that he can't like elude and be tricky. He just has straight line speed and he's a, you know, big, strong guy who can run through a linebacker. Like the kid went to Duke and he can't realize, okay, you know, there are only three guys in front of me. Maybe I can do this myself. And that's really what it boils down to. You don't see plays extend for this offense ever that scare the defense. You're just like, oh God, you know, the pocket's going to collapse. Don't let, you know, something bad happen. You see real, and even college, you see guys, you know, 2-3 seconds into a play, that first read isn't open, and you're worried that they're going to kill, you know, gash you, like the NBA equivalent of getting the offensive rebound that turns into an easy three. And those plays aren't there. And what's so difficult is because that Seattle game, we had that weirdness at the beginning of the game on the goal line. Everything the Giants showed that game was resilience. You know, yes. They'd get punched in the mouth and they'd come back stronger. With at home games, we can't get a false start. It's like it's a false start in the game.
Well, it's because you guys are booing them too much.
That's true. I've said that, you know, I think we do better on the road because it's a less hostile crowd. But but you know, as one thing goes off script and there's no recovery for us more often than not. And whether it be like, and what, like the one thing that I really hated from the press conference today, because I'm a stats guy and I very much will
the close get, games. Take offense.
No, well, that part of it. But when I feel like somebody's trying to give me a stat that insults my intelligence, yeah. Like Gettleman's first, and I just said his name, but his first press conference he said, you know, last year we were 3-13. This year we're 5-11. I thought that's progress, wouldn't you? And this year Shane's like, well, you know, Wandale Robinson's in the top 10 in receptions.
Oh, yeah.
Like, buddy, like, yeah, Wandale, you know, Wandale's, you know, because Daniel Jones has him on his fantasy team in a 3 PPR league or whatever. Like, if you take away all the third downs that, you know, that are short of the sticks, he's, I still like the guy, but I don't want to hear that he's a great draft pick because he's turning, you know, 3rd and 9 into 4th and 5 and we're punting. Like,
no, if I have to watch Daniel Jones throw to Wandale Robinson on, you know, a 4-yard hitch route when it's 3rd and 14 or 3rd and 9, I might bounce my head into a wall. I actually did bounce my head into a wall during the Cowboy game, believe it or not. I was very emotional during that game. But yeah, that I do hate those kind of things. And I think I didn't like the whole close game things. But I want to close it out with this, right? I want to ask you this question. I've waited until the end. Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Missing piece for the Eagles. Do you think that puts, because I don't think the Eagles survive a lot of Nick Sirianni's bad coaching if Barkley's presence is not there, believe it or not. Because I think he's made it so easy for them to be like, hey, just give me the ball. Don't do anything stupid. We have a good offensive line. Let me get these yards.
For the first time in Saquon's career, if I were to have written a letter to him at any point in my life, this is what that letter would have said. That's all I'm going to say on that note. But for the first time in his career, he's able to be Saquon. He's not asked to be the number two overall pick who turns a team from a bad team into a good team. He's playing in his shoes. He's following the game plan. He's not necessarily trying to create things that aren't there. And man, he's a talented running back. Like, you know, when he's on a team to just play football and not to be something he's not, I mean, he really offers a lot. Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of fun, you know, with that drop against the Falcons. And, you know, if we get a chance to get a repeat like that, I mean, put it in my veins. But yeah, I mean, he's able to do something for a team that's ready for him to do something for them, which I mean, every game,
like Nick Sirianni might do something stupid. And the very next play, they'll give the ball to Saquon and Saquon, like, okay, fixes the situation. Right. Like he's like the fixer for that team.
If I had to guess, you know, with the hater hat in me, what I would say is there's going to be a crunch situation where it's going to be like a tight game in the playoffs. They're not, you know, necessarily playing an AFC South team or whatever that might be, where he's probably going to try to, you know, do a little bit more than he should. And, you know, and that might blow up or maybe
run out of bounds on third down and keep time on the clock.
Maybe it, from just taking a lot of the carries that he's taken over the year, maybe, you know, that'll catch up to him. Like, I don't necessarily think, I still would say that the Eagles are not going to get, you know, 3 years of this kind of play from the guy. But, you know, as much as I am happy that he went to the Eagles, just as much as anything. So the idea of Giants fans lionizing him and his legacy, there was a pin put in that. It looks like they made a good move by bringing him in. It would have been a bad move for us to give him the same contract, but it looks for the Eagles like it's a good move.
Yeah, I think I 100% agree with you on the not giving Saquon the extension part. That was pretty clear on that. But all right, Will. I think I'm going to come up to a game. I think if Drew Lock starts or DeVito starts, I'll come up. Just to see everyone, but it was a pleasure having you, Will, and I really appreciate you working with me to get you on here.
It's always a pleasure to chat, Weiss. It's been
I got a lot of love for you, Will. I know you know that, but I got a lot of love for you.
I appreciate it. It's nice to hear a little bit of love going around in Giants world.
Every time I see people that go after you on Twitter, I'm like, man, if only you guys knew how big of a sweetheart Will is. You guys would not be saying this stuff.
Well, I think, you know, and I think a lot of that, you know, I think of something as we're getting to the end of Jones's career, like, and I've caught myself on this a few times, like, you know, he'll make a bad throw and I'll say to myself on my couch, I just freaking hate this guy. And then I think of what I said in the Packers game in 2022, what I tweeted, and a lot of people, it's my pinned tweet, I think a lot of people responded, just say you hate the guy and be done with it.
Yeah.
I will respect Daniel Jones for the rest of my life. I still don't want him to be the quarterback next year. And like, it goes down to when we first drafted him. If you remember the first week he was drafted, he went to the Yankees games. They put him on the Jumbotron and he got booed. And people are like, oh my God, you know, Giants fans, how could you do something?
Yeah. They made him into a martyr right there.
It's not from anything that Jones did. It's because the organization always looked at him as something that he wasn't. Right. And, you know, and you can't blame the guy. I mean, his toughness has been off the charts. His heart has been off the charts. Unfortunately,
we get reminded every week how hard of a worker he is.
But when you talk about a quarterback and the first thing you're talking about is his toughness, that means you're talking about a problematic quarterback. Like, you don't, that's not what people say about Josh Allen. That's not what people say about Lamar. I think a lot of people have kind of projected emotional sentiment about the Giants when they've disagreed with me onto my takes, thinking that I've been as emotional as they are because we don't feel the same way. But I mean, I want the Giants to be good. And I think
one thing I'll say about you, I'll give you credit for this and we'll wrap up with that, is you've been right on a lot of things, but you're not somebody that likes to take victory laps. So,
well, I mean, I'll like to laugh at
the person. Yeah, you'll do that thing where silly. You look up tweets about people, but you're always a person that's like, you know,
like what I really like healthy dialogue. And I think, you know, one of the people who's taught me most about football of anyone on Twitter is Carl Banks. But when Carl says, like, okay, fans who don't want DJ to have success are goofy, and he's not realizing that people are thinking, like, okay, we realize if DJ struggles more and makes it easy to move off of him, that's the best thing for, you know, for the long-term health. I mean, as a player, you know, in the locker room, he's not thinking, like, okay, if the quarterback has a bad game, we could get a better quarterback in this year. That's not the mentality that Carl thinks. And I can absolutely understand that. But there needs to be a little bit more intellectual empathy on Giants Twitter of saying, okay, this is something that disagrees with me. It might not necessarily be the most rewarding thing for right now. Why is this really what this person wants? Not necessarily like, oh my God, he's mad that he won. He's complaining that we won. He's just going to be unhappy either way. Like, it's, you know, there's too much simplicity about some of that. But I appreciate the kind words. I appreciate the chance to chat again.
You can't simplify Will, man. Will is not a simple guy, but he is a very nice guy. Will, thank you very much, man. I really appreciate you.
Always a pleasure. And, you know, hope to see Nick and Ethan soon. It's they've been a blast all year as well.
Yeah, I'm going to come up to a game. I will. I got to see you.
We'll make it happen. Take care, Weiss.
Peace.
Go Blue.